Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough Directions. Each week, Breakthrough Directions explores the two faces of your business, outward through marketing and client delivery, and inward, your vision, profit model, systems, team, and you, so you can grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome, everyone, to another great episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, calling to you live this week from Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. We have got a great show lined up for you guys today. We have my co-host, Linda Feinholz, the founder of the Breakthrough Academy at breakthroughbydesign.com. Linda's calling in live this week from Los Angeles, California. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Gina. I am so excited by our guest. I feel like I've been waiting in anticipation for weeks and weeks and weeks. A lot of our listeners know Yifat Cohen because we brought the Google Plus go-to gal to them through our show. And it was through Yifat that I actually met today's guest, and I have been waiting with such anticipation to bring him for a couple of different reasons. One is that he both exemplifies what it is to start down a road following your interests and your passions and seeing them develop through living it, through getting out there and trying things. And then turning that into a business. And so I'm so looking forward to the conversation we're going to have today on so many different fronts. And I'm so pleased to be bringing David Siteman Garland to join us for this full hour. David, welcome aboard.
Linda, Gina, it is great to be here from exotic St. Louis, Missouri. So I'm excited to be here, guys.
Well, welcome. Well, thanks for joining us.
You know, David, you're very renowned nowadays for the Rise to the Top online web show, and we so often talk with people who are, I don't know, I'll call it mid-stage career. They're thinking about adding something to themselves, to their life, to their profession now. But you started before anyone much understood technology, how to use it, what to do with it, and I'd love to start back there, and how did all of it come about?
Yeah, it's funny because, I mean, I got to tell you, to this day, though, I would still nowhere consider myself a techie, which I think is a great thing because, you know, nothing against techies or anything like that, but I think a lot of people get held back by that fear all the time, too, you know, of not wanting to start kind of down this, I call it the mediapreneur industry, but really it's the industry of, you know, sharing advice and creating your own products and programs. And, you know, it's funny because I can do a little bit, but I am like, people would laugh if they watched how I operate their things. So it does not take any kind of technology background to do this. But the funny thing was, you know, I came from a very non-traditional path of kind of getting to where we're at today, which is really kind of helping mediapreneurs. And what happened was, in a nutshell, is I came up with an idea, like a crazy person, for a local TV show in 2008. I'm in St. Louis, Missouri, and I had this random idea that basically popped into my head at a coffee shop. That I was going to create this local TV show and interview local entrepreneurs. And, you know, my game plan, I had no idea what I was doing. So I'd love to tell you this great game plan that was going to be fantastic. But my game plan was just to figure out how to get it started. And, you know, I ended up doing that TV show for 36 episodes, local TV show here, and starting online, starting to kind of build a business online, really, really kind of trial by fire. I mean, I didn't have, you know, I'd love to give all kinds of advice to myself back then, but I was just trying to figure out a way that I could do something that I love to do, create some kind of like meaningful content and help people and make a living, you know, make some money from it. And that's how I started, and it's shifted and changed and evolved and gone backwards and forwards and sideways since then. But really, the original idea, which is nowhere what it is now, was kind of a quote-unquote local TV show, and that is, you know, it's very much way back in 2008, which is like 1907 in internet terms.
Did you ever actually do that local TV show?
Yeah, I did 36 episodes of it. A lot of people don't know that. I did 30.
Wow.
I did three 12 episode seasons of it. here on local TV. And basically what we did is that I took, like, my savings and what I basically did was I took my savings and I'd get airtime. So we'd, like, buy airtime, you know, in local markets, and we'd get it, like, produced. I mean, it was a whole other business model that I would not recommend for anyone. But that's, yeah, really kind of how I got a little bit started. And I didn't have a fan base. I didn't have an audience. I had barely a business model. And, you know, it's grown and changed so much today where it's, you know, now turned into a, you know, multiple six-figure online business that I can run in my underwear. And, you know, that has really been quite a journey for sure.
So we're going to go deep into so many different aspects here, but there's one question I would love to ask you. I refer to it as the spark effect. Here you were.
Sure.
You started with the spark of the first idea. You were doing all of this planning, organizing, execution in order to be able to do three seasons. What was the next spark that had you say, oh, that's where I'm heading next?
Yeah, great question. So this is an interesting spark. Because that's a great question, because, you know, you hear all these stories, you know, especially of online entrepreneurs. So, like, people, I keep using the phrase because I feel like there's no better phrase, but I love the phrase mediapreneur, right? And what I mean by that is, you know, coaches, authors, experts, you know, who are building businesses online, you know, about helping people with advice. And the shift came for me, oddly, when I met my now wife. That was kind of my biggest shift, and here's why. It was a big spark. And the reason was this. The TV show kind of started to grow a little bit, and it would cause me to kind of be out traveling, and it just got a little bit – it basically kind of turned into a 24-hour-a-day stress bomb, the TV show, because it was just a lot of stuff to do, and it was just very, very overwhelming. And so I, at that point, sparked, and I said, listen, I'm on to something here, but I'm a little bit off. I need to figure out what it is. But I want to create a business where I can run it from, you know, home. I can run it on hours that aren't, you know, crazy. I can create leverage with it so that, you know, meaning it's not just requiring dollars for hours. So, I mean, like, meaning I can kind of punch dollars for hours in the face, if you will, and create a better business model. And basically create it around the lifestyle that I wanted, which is, you know, I don't want to call myself a homebody, but I like to have freedom. I like to kind of, like, you know, play a lot of recreational sports. I like to have plenty of time with my wife. I like to unplug on vacations. I like to do all those different things that I wasn't doing under the old business model because it was really, really stressful. Like, I felt like there was this one trip I took where I literally think I was glued to the computer 24/7, and I was like, this is not the way to do it. And so I kind of changed my shift from sort of that media mindset, which was kind of going big and, like, you know, high stress and like sponsors and extreme and all that kind of stuff, and moved more into this industry, kind of the quote unquote expert industry. And that was really shifted because of my wife, and I didn't want to travel around and do all those shenanigans that I was going to have to do to do it. So that's a very interesting question.
And so when you had that realization, in a sense, you had to start off researching what's next or how could this be done next. It wasn't immediately evident and obvious how to switch out of that one medium of television-based into something next.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. And it's funny because, you know, I think at certain points, you know, we start finding sort of mentors and teachers at the right times, you know, when you want to. And for me, you know, there was actually a buddy of mine that I actually don't talk about a lot. I should probably talk about him more. But his name is Scott Ginsberg, and he's known as the name tag guy. And he's a guy who's built a basically kind of multiple six-figure, you know, teaching, training, consulting, speaking business all around the idea of wearing a name tag. He's worn a name tag, I think, for like 12 years, something like that, every single day. And he talks about approachability, and he wrote books, and he does all these different things. And I looked at him, he's being from St. Louis, there's not a ton of people like that, you know? And so I looked at him and I was like, what is this guy doing? This looks so interesting. He's teaching people. He's creating programs. He's got like this interesting shtick with the name tag. And I was like, oh man, this is interesting. What does he do? So we sat down and I think I ended up going to a couple events. And then, you know, these things kind of spiral. You start to get momentum and you start to learn things. And the thing that I always try to pride myself on you know, there's very few things that I do well, but the ones I do well, I know what I can do well. And one of them is, if I learn something, I want to implement it right away. So, you know, if I learn how to, you know, craft a speech and go speak, or if I learn how to create a program or a product or whatever it is, I would always be like, okay, I'm not doing anything else so I get that done. Because I think one of the things that I see that kind of plagues this industry is what I call serial learners. And serial learners are the folks that buy everything or get all the advice but never do anything with it. And I think instead of being serial learners, we sort of have to be serial implementers. And that's sort of what I've tried to pride myself on doing is throughout this kind of thing, is every time I wanted to learn something, I'd figure it out. I'd go find someone or buy something or do whatever we need to do and then keep moving to the next level with it.
Mm, beautiful. I love that. You know, Gina and I so often in each of our programs are constantly telling our students and our clients, you know, the goal is to fail fast. Imperfect
right.
beats working things to death for perfection before you take any action.
And also
my
decisiveness, you know. Decisiveness is so important, too, meaning I'd rather make the wrong decision than no decision.
My favorite quote
decision.
Is something I learned from one of my mentors, Kevin Nations, and that is, winners take imperfect action while losers are still perfecting the plan. And that
exactly.
is exactly what you're describing. Imperfect action beats not taking any action every time.
Exactly, because I run into people, you know, also through my products and programs, too, and I study kind of success and also with, you know, doing 350,000 interviews on the Rise to the Top, too, is you start to pick up, you know, between customers and conversations and interviews and all these different things, what separates the people that are really kind of dominating this industry and also are super happy about it. And, you know, you notice that the ones that do it aren't sitting there for 6 months wondering if they should create, like, an ebook or a coaching program. You know, it's like they might create the coaching program and it might be a miserable failure, but then they move on to do something else and then the next thing works or something like that. So that's been a huge lesson along the way that really it's such a simple thing, but so many people don't do it.
So true. Yeah, and one of the things that I constantly emphasize is when we get out of bed on Tuesday morning, most of us on planet Earth are doing it for business purposes. And so often what I find is, like you talked about the serial learners and so on, is there's so many folks out there that are waiting for the perfect model or the perfect idea and so on. And so what happens is they build a life of busyness instead of profitability. And what's so important is to day in and day out say, I'm trying to make a difference in the world, and how am I stabilizing my own world, my own life economically? How am I taking what I'm spending my time on in order to bring in money, bring in revenue, bring in profit? And so that's something that clearly you had to do stage by stage when you were doing the TV show and you mentioned getting sponsors.
Yeah.
And so how did you carry that through in each of these versions of your business?
Yeah, great question, because I love this conversation, because I love talking about revenue, because I feel like people are sometimes are scared to talk about, you know revenue and how you're making money. But the thing is, you know, and you know this, in our industry, and I'm talking about all of us on the phone today and also, you know, on the show, but also everyone listening, right, is that, you know, it's very hard to help people and help them get results if you're not charging them for product programs or whatever you're doing, right? Very simple. And, you know, for me, so when I started this, kind of coming from this figuring it out with media, you know, I didn't know a ton about other forms of generating revenue. So meaning I thought, you know, back in the day that my ideal situation was like kind of create this quote-unquote big show and then, you know, I'd have sponsors and advertisers, right? And I still have a couple sponsors and things like that. But here's the thing, you cannot – having sponsors and advertisers is not a long-term business model in this industry, because here's the thing, you're in complete lack of control of that. So meaning a sponsor could wake up tomorrow on the wrong side of the bed, or someone gets fired or changes jobs, and they might say, you know what, we love working with you, but we're not going to do it anymore. And can you imagine if that's your only revenue stream, right? Like you're screwed overnight because of sponsors and advertisers out of your control. So, you know, what I started learning, you know, just again through, and again, this is back in the day as I was putting this all together, I started learning about, okay, what are the top people in the industry doing, right? Like, what are they doing and what are they teaching and what? Why is that, right? And this is very, again, this isn't like revolutionary material here, but I was looking at this and I wanted to answer that question. I wanted to know what were they doing that how were they generating revenue? And the simple answer to it is that they create their own products and programs. And, of course, another opportunity is to promote other people's products and programs as well as an affiliate. And so, for me, I started, talking with, people that I made friends with in the industry, the Marie Forleos, the Derek Halperns, the Amy Porterfields, the Ryan Lees, and folks like that. And for me, I realized that information, of course, is the top thing that people are selling, right? So meaning, advice, how-to information is the number one thing. And then the one that I got the most excited about, even though there's many different ways you can package stuff up and do things, was I became very, very excited and passionate about creating these online courses and selling them to people. Because of all the business models, that to me was the most lucrative because it was the most leverage. It was the most, you weren't just working with people one-on-one. You charge premium prices for courses and you don't need a huge amount of buyers for it to be successful. There's a lot of reasons why courses were great. And I noticed that all the top people, and if you go to, I don't care if you're dog training or home decorating or, business coaching, whatever it is, the top people, one of their revenue streams is always online courses. And so for me, I immersed myself into that world for a couple years to just learn everything I could about it and create my own. And that's really what the biggest shift was, when I moved from, kind of quote-unquote other people's money to bringing in my own customers.
Very cool. Very cool. So did you how shall I put this? Did you roll out your revenue approaches sort of one little step at a time? Did you say, first I need to figure out how to make the blog profitable, then the web show or podcast or standalone courses? How did that construct come to be?
Yeah, so here's kind of the non-linear pattern, if you will, that happened, right? So when I started, it was just local sponsors and advertisers, anything I could basically get at that point. And then what ended up happening was I started getting more requests for dollars per hours, which is fine. I mean, I'm not against that. It was just as a positive, right? So what ended up happening is when you have a platform, when you have a show, when you have something that you're teaching, inevitably some people are going to want to hopefully hire you for something, right? It's just the question is, what's that something? So for me, then I started doing some more speaking, first at free and then more paid speaking at events, talking about, building the show or talking about just my experiences and things like that. So I started getting some more speaking. And then I would start to get requests, for consulting and coaching on one-on-one. So I started doing a little bit of that. Quickly, as the schedule can fill up when you're doing things like that as you start to sort of evolve. And then what happened is my first leveraged opportunity came, and believe it or not, it was actually a book deal. A publishing company approached me to do a book back in the day before, they approached me in, 2009 or 2010, I guess, early 2010, to do a book. And I ended up signing a publishing deal and publishing a book called Smarter, Faster, Cheaper, which was an online, basically, how to grow an online audience and things like that, because I had become kind of known for growing audiences and figuring out how to do it for folks. So I wrote that book, and it was it was a great opportunity, by the way. So, I had this book. I've got this physical thing. My grandma's very happy. My mom's very happy. But the book itself, as you guys know, it had high impact, meaning a lot of people read it and got results, which is awesome and incredible and why I do stuff, but it didn't have high revenue. Because even though I got an advance and things like that, as you know, books a lot of times are not massive revenue makers. So I needed to have more. So, for me, I was like putting this criteria together of stuff that I really wanted. And I wanted something that had, big revenue, big impact, and also wasn't trading dollars for hours. Those were sort of my criteria that I was looking for as I evolved, right? Like each I saw each revenue opportunity and each thing that I tried to be sort of what do I like or not like about it? And certain things I realized were like, low impact but high revenue, or high revenue but also high time and commitment and stress. And so I wanted to balance those things out and also and basically have those, like I said, those three criteria of really being, you know, leveraging time, generating big revenue, and also creating big impact. So meaning that it's really helping people and getting, you know, big results for those. And that's what eventually led to my first online course.
Cool. Very cool.
And what was your first online course?
So my first online course was called Create Awesome Interviews. And the idea behind it was, you know, after doing 300-plus interviews, is that I would get a lot of questions from folks how to start their own interview-based web show, how to do, you know, how to conduct the interviews, how to market interviews, how to shoot interviews, all that kind of stuff. And so basically I took all that knowledge and put it into a course. It was kind of one of those things. It's funny because I am not a procrastinator, but I originally procrastinated on this. I mean, this is killer because I should have done that course. You know, or if I were to go back and change one thing, I would do that course 2 years before I did that course. Because people started coming up to me and asking me if I had a course for sale, if I had a product for sale, and the only thing I gave them at the time was, like, my book, because that's what I had. If I were to go back and change anything, what I would actually do is, and this is a no-brainer now, right? I mean, no-brainer. But when my book, Smarter, Faster, Cheaper, came out, I would also have had a Smarter, Faster, Cheaper advanced course. I would have maybe a Smarter, Faster, Cheaper, blah, blah, blah. You know, more programs to leverage off of the book, which I did not do, which is a no-brainer. So you learn as you go, of course, and now I would do that again. But, you know, that was really kind of how that evolved since then, because I would literally have people coming up to me at events and say, David, you have to, like, create something and sell it to me. And I was like, okay, I got to do something. So oftentimes, though, the topics are right under our nose. And for me, it was the interviewing because it just was, I got so many questions on it, and I knew it was such a hot topic that I wanted to turn that into my first course. And that course, you know, it's resulted in hundreds and hundreds of people creating their own shows, and it's generated, you know, multiple six figures in revenue. And, you know, it's really kind of changed the way that I look at business and kind of changed the way I look at the brand for sure.
And what once you created that and saw that you were really getting traction, it was really serving a need, that there were people out there and it was answering exactly the thing that they wanted solved, what was next?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, it's always a question of what's next, you know? So, I mean, you know, for me, you know, because I don't like to sit there and dawdle, if you will. So for me, where I went from there was, well, one is, you know, I didn't, actually, at first say what's next, I wanted to perfect what I had. So I started working on marketing funnels. I started working on, you know, how can we generate more interest for the course? How can I bring in more leads for the course? I became, you know, started learning tons and tons about marketing funnels and working with friends and stuff like that. You know, I have a group of people that I bounce ideas off of. We kind of have a mastermind together. And, you know, it's learning, okay, how can I bring in more leads for this course and perfect the sales page. So just little tweaks and stuff like that. Like that, I really wanted to make it good. So that was one of the first things I did. The second thing I did from there was I created an online event to help people that had web shows and online platforms like blogs and stuff like that grow their audience and generate more revenue. So I actually did an online event called the Talk to the Top where I started bringing in friends of mine and other speakers and stuff like that, and we did a big event last fall, all online, all via webinars that we sold tickets to, and that was another success kind of going off of the leverage here of, you know, creating your own products and programs and events and stuff like that, and that was, yeah, that was really the next step that I went to was that online event, which was fun too.
So I have a question for you. One of the things I adore about your programs is your personality. You are completely exuberant, and it feels both real, natural, authentic. And I have got to believe that there are some people who come to you to take your course who say to you, David, how do I be more like you? I'm more introverted. I'm not that comfortable on camera or whatever. They've still got the expertise. They want to take it out. They want it to make a difference in the world, and they're trying to figure out how to use these different avenues to connect with their ideal tribe, community, and so on. What do you do with someone where they really are, they're looking at the naturalness and exuberance that you are as a personality, whether it's here, you know, where it's all just audio or whether you're on camera and so on, and they're trying to grapple with that part of how to take themselves into this world?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so first of all, I can't teach you to be like you, but I can, to be like me, but I can teach you to be like you, you know? I think that's the key lesson there, because it took me, you know, a while to really make sure that my voice was coming through the way that I am. And so for me, the people that want to, you know, be like me, it's really the wrong question. It's really, how do you be like you, right? And for me, it takes practice over time, but kind of a breakthrough moment was that I watched some of my early videos and kind of watched this because something isn't right. Because the way that I was early on in this, I think I was acting more like what I thought I should be like as opposed to what I was actually like. So meaning, you know, I was probably emulating some other TV hosts or whatever at the time, you know. And so the bottom line is, and one of the big lessons is that you don't really need to be different, and you shouldn't be offline and online. So the biggest compliment that I can ever get from anyone, and I hear this often, so this makes me very excited, is when I meet someone in person and they're like, you know what, you're exactly like you are on your show. You're exactly like you are on video. You're exactly like you are in your course. Because I've met people, unfortunately, where that's not the case, where they're just different people online and offline. And it doesn't mean that you can't dial yourself up a little bit if you're on video, you know, kind of, you know, energize yourself a little bit extra. And that's not what I'm talking about. But just, you know, I think that at the end of the day, you can't be scared of turning people off with your personality and the way that you are. Because some people are going to love you, some people aren't going to care, and some people aren't going to care for you. But at the end of the day, you can't worry about, you know, category two and three there, and you only need to cater to the people that really like you. So, like, one of my big things was, listen, I understand that my style or your style or anyone's style, it's not for everyone, right? Like, I know that some people – I actually had someone – how about this one? I had someone respond to a survey a few weeks ago that said, some anonymous person, and they responded, they're like, David, you know what? And they were dead serious. They're like, David, you know what? You shouldn't be so darn jovial in your content. You shouldn't be so happy. And I'm like, yeah, that's just not going to happen, you know? But so the bottom line is, when I see someone like that, you have to have the strength amongst yourself. Like, you have to have the confidence to say, you know what? That person is not my person. That is not one of my peeps. That is not someone that I need to care about. I'm not going to change because, you know, some random person says, hey, do this. You know what I mean? Or, hey, do that. You just have to be comfortable in your own skin. So, you know, one little kind of tweak, if you're kind of concerned about that, is that, you know, if you're doing a video or doing anything like that, have one of your best friends or have your mom or have someone that you're super comfortable with sit with you when you're doing it and just talk to them and film it. Because I guarantee you're going to be a lot more real in that situation than just staring into a camera lens, you know, being somewhat anonymous at the time. So that's kind of a little tip for it, but bottom line is it just takes practice and don't think that you need to be like anyone, just be like you, for sure.
Way back in 2007, as I was exiting my last business as a JV broker and opening the doors to an education and training company, I got into a very heated discussion/debate with another marketer. And he had said to me that I was destined to be a failure as a coach and mentor and being an education and training company, because it could not possibly do well until I could be a snob. And I took offense to that. And I'm like, you know, if you've got to be a snob to be successful, then count me among the poor, because I am just not going to be a snob. It's just not who I am. So I took that on as a bit of a challenge, and I went out and started doing some research and investigating to figure out, were the people successful as coaches, authors, and infopreneurs, were they really snobs, or was there something else that was behind their success? And the conclusion that I came to was, you don't need to be a snob, but you really do need to have an air of authority about you and about the way that you do things. you really can be jovial, but you've got to be self-assured, self-confident. How would you describe that, David?
Yeah, no, that first of all, great point. And by the way, horrible advice from that person. So,
I agree.
absolutely horrible advice. But, okay. Great question, great point there. It's like you can't, so snob, I think that there were these sort of, I don't know, kind of experts of yesteryear, if you will, that kind of had this holier-than-thou attitude, you know, that they're like the all-knowing, and I hate this word, I'm going to say it, and it's going to make me cringe, they're like the all-knowing, like, guru sitting on the mountain, you know, that knows everything about everything. And I think that we've evolved past that, thank God. And the thing is, you know, what people really look for is they want someone that they can also relate to. That's on, like, their level. You might have something interesting to share, but you're not talking down to people. You're talking with them, right? And for me, though, you do, though, and I totally agree with that point. It's such a great point. You do have to have confidence, though, that you have something to share with them. And confidence doesn't mean that you come in as a jerk, but confidence that it's very, very hard to have a successful, you know, expert or mediapreneur business if you don't exude, you know, confidence when mm-hmm. you're coming across. It doesn't mean that you're all-knowing. It doesn't mean that you're not human. It doesn't mean that you don't make jokes. It doesn't mean that you don't show your personality. It just means that, you know, that you're confident with it. But let's not confuse confidence with perfection either, because I think when things come across as too polished, too perfect, they come across as almost not human, you know?
Yes.
And that's why I think that people resonate with people, like, you know, I've had things where I drop the camera. I have things where, you know, funny things happen or not funny things or whatever happens. But, you know, I think people appreciate the humanity in it as long as it's not distracting. And so for me, I think that's absolutely critical and an amazing point for people as well. Yeah, do not sell from your heels. Do not give advice from your heels, because no one wants someone without confidence teaching them.
Do you know Simon Mainwaring, the number one best-selling author of We First?
No, but sounds interesting.
Oh, yeah, go check it out, wefirstbranding.com. Simon is Simon's responsible for branding for companies like Coca-Cola, Nike, Microsoft, lots of the really, really big companies who are now using social media to get their message and their products out to the world. And one of my very favorite things that Simon has said, both in his book and in a lot of what he does, is that in today's world, in this social media world that we live in, we need to become the biggest celebrants of our brand instead of the biggest celebrities in our brand. And I think that's really what we're talking about here, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, right, like if you break down this entire industry, this like help industry or the, you know, expert industry, the end of the day, there's only one singular goal that's going to make you successful in this industry, right? And the singular goal is really results. Right? I mean, that's all this entire industry is just about results. And it's not your results. It's the results of your customers, clients, you know, whoever purchases your products, programs, you know, working with you. Because at the end of the day, that's the singular goal of what it is. It's you know, if you're the person that's teaching people how to save money and they save $500, if you're teaching people how to, attract the perfect mate and they attract the perfect mate, That's whatever it is that you teach people, at the end of the day, the results are the only thing that matters. And I think sometimes we get wrapped up in sort of the minutiae and the little stuff that's going on, that some of the people that aren't as successful, they forget about it because they make it all about them, right? It's all about like how wonderful or awesome I am, and it's not about how can I help you. And if you shift that mindset, you know, and it doesn't become the you party. And that was something that, you know, I thought about and have learned over time. It's just that, you know, people want to learn from you, but at the end of the day, it's about their results, not about, you know, how awesome you are.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Although we're all pretty awesome, right? No.
Of course.
Of course, because we can tell you about all of the results the people who have learned from us have been able to create in their worlds.
Exactly. And that's a little tip right there, real fast tip for people. Like, whatever your products and programs are that you're creating, or one-on-one coaching or whatever, if you go out there and you're soliciting testimonials from your buyers, always ask about their results. Like, I know it's a no-brainer thing to say, but a lot of times people will come back to you and say, oh, you're such a wonderful teacher. Linda, you're so awesome. Like, you're amazing. And you know what? That stuff's all great. But at the end of the day, other people are looking for what results they get, not telling you how awesome you are. So something that I always say when I'm asking folks, like, for feedback on programs, is like, tell me about your specific results with that or this. And that really, really can be a little help when it comes to getting some really good feedback and some proof, honestly.
You know what's really fascinating is the three of us being in this teaching training pursuit. We all have to keep reminding ourselves it's not about the process, it's about the result, because people
yep.
will say to us, oh, how are you going to help me?
And their
questions trigger us to slide right into answering process instead of getting back to what's the result you're trying to create, and have I been able to create those results for others in the past? At the high level, how will I help you get those results? And especially the three of us are in this, how are we transforming others by transferring know-how to them? We have to keep inviting them back into the responsibility and the accountability of take what you're learning and implement it so it becomes yours and the results are your results.
Right. I mean, it's such a great point because, you know, a couple things on that. I mean, number one is that, you know, and for folks that are, you know, more on the starting end of this, depending on where people are at in their journey, you know, your number one results are going to be your results, right? How you lost 20 pounds, how you did this, you know what I mean? Before you're helping other people, a lot of times it's your results. But the other thing is people get confused when they're putting programs together, putting a course together, putting something together where they're like, wow, if I'm charging a higher price for something, because I'm a big fan of premium pricing, that I have to give them everything in the kitchen sink, meaning that if they're buying something from me and it's of a higher price point, then I have to give them, you know, 100 modules or something like that when it's actually the opposite, because at the end of the day, it's all about the result, right? And so your job is to get people to that result as, you know, quickly and non-stressfully, that's not a word, but we'll just go with it, as efficiently as possible. So, you know, I had someone come to me and they said, you know, should my course be 25 modules? And I said, well, why would it be 25 modules if you can get everything across and get them the result in five? There's no need to do that, you know, because at the end of the day, it's not about giving people the most information. It's giving them the correct information in the correct package to get them the result.
Yeah, yeah. Beautifully put. You know, for the folks who are listening, we've created a link on it's in the show notes, and as well as, you know, for those who are listening now, if you go to bbdnow.com/CAOC, which stands for Create Awesome Online Courses. David, I just have to confess, I had to figure out a way to shorten it.
Hey, listen, you know, bless your heart. We don't want to be, yeah, I just try to make it complicated for everyone, so.
I know, so bbdnow.com, CAOC, stands for Create Awesome Online Courses. So that is going to take people to these fabulous free videos that you have, as well as, you know, from there they can access if they want to learn from you in the program itself and so on. You've really, because you've lived it and you were trying to figure out the roadmap in front of you and then stepping out onto it and living it and then turning around and going, what worked, what could have worked better, and so on over and over, you've created this five steps to coming up with an online course that sells, and I would love it if you would talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, and thank you for the shameless plug as well, and I'm looking forward to people checking out the free training. You know, I've always tried to pride myself on, you know, giving away, like, stuff that people are like, oh, my God, like, his stuff's so awesome that I learned so much, and now I want to buy everything he has, you know? So I appreciate the plug with that. So let's talk about that for a second. You know, one of the struggles with people
that I run into all the time is the idea of, okay, what exactly should I create my online course on? You know, where, like, you know, what's the topic? Because the fear there, right, is that you create something and no one buys it. That's the fear. And I've been able to basically, you know, through this training here, and I'm going to tell you the exact 5 steps here, but I've been able to I want to get rid of people's worry about that by putting some steps into place so that you can test to see if this is something people are interested in without, you know, spending a ton of money or really spending any money whatsoever. So the only requirements for these steps, and really the only requirements for kind of this training for it to work for everyone that's listening to this, is really only 2 things. The requirements are that you have some kind of platform of some kind. So that just could be a blog, it could be a show, it could be a newsletter, it could be YouTube videos, any kind of thing that you create online content. That's requirement number one. And requirement number two is an email list of some kind. It does not have to be big at all. My first product launch, I only have 400 people on the email list. So do not think that you need a big email list, but having some kind of email list, even if it's 20 people, is definitely necessary. So I like to kind of get that, you know, kind of point in there in terms of who this is for. So let's talk about those steps. So the first thing is number one is really paying attention to the types of questions that you're asked. So here's what I want you guys to think about is number one is, you know, what topics am I always asked about? What is the most common question that I get via email? What is the most common question I get, you know, on my blog, show, or online platform? What's the most common question I get on social media? Okay, that's a great way to think about, because a lot of times, whatever it is that you're going to teach is right under your nose, and you don't even know it. Like for me, I was getting questions about interviews, right? Like, how do I shoot an interview? How do I get a guest for an interview? How do you make money from interviews? And I knew that there was an opportunity there because these questions started coming in. So that is kind of step one, is starting to pay attention to the number one questions that you're asked.
Right.
And also, by the way, another good, like, step 1A there is, and this is a no-brainer, go out into your niche on your topic and look around and see what other people are selling as well, and see if that maybe you have a slightly different angle, a different take, another perspective on that topic. Because sometimes we don't need to completely reinvent the wheel. We just need to take our own perspective on it. Because, you know, I'm sure you two, have you guys been to a bookstore lately? Either one of you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so my guess is there's not just one cooking book there, right? There's probably not one cooking book in the bookstore. There's probably a lot. Would be my guess, right?
Shelves of them.
Exactly. And so the idea is that let's not get caught up that someone else is already doing what you're doing, because there's many, many ways to put your own spin, your own perspective, your own story on it, because we all have unique spins and perspectives and stories. So don't get caught up in, oh, there already is the program for this. You know, when I went out there and I looked for interviews, I saw that there were a few different programs out there, but I saw how I had a different perspective. Like, one was too technical. One was fairly vague. One wasn't really step-by-step. So I was like, okay, now I know that I can create something that has a little bit of a gap there. So that's kind of one of the key steps. And the other ones, you know, I did go through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but I just want to give a really quick one that actually is kind of 2 through 5, if you will, is the best thing to do also is to send out a little bit of a survey to your list. So I don't care, again, I had someone that has a very successful course, when their original survey they sent out only got 10 responses. So you got to realize you don't need a zillion responses to say, okay, green light. But you know how many people are on your email list. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no exact number here. But what you're looking for is just, are some people interested in this, right? And do they have questions? So here's what I do. After I kind of think about what questions people are asking me, and after I also, if you have a platform like a blog or a show, if you go back and look at if you've done anything that's how-to related, and it got a big response, that's also a green light as well. You know, there could be an opportunity there, so something to keep in mind. But what I like to do is I send out what I call the one question survey. The one question survey. So all I did was send out a survey to people, and I simply said, listen, I know some folks are interested in, you know, learning about online interviews. I want to know about your questions. And I required them to leave their name and their email, and I said, what are your questions about online interviews? I didn't say I'm creating a course. I didn't say anything like that. You just ask them, what are your questions on blank? And you leave it as an open-ended survey. And you send that out, and you see what happens. Because here's the fun thing. Number one, you're going to pick up the language that people are using. Number two, you're going to pick up their problems and what they need help with. And number three, and this one will definitely happen, you'll be shocked at some of the simplicity of the questions. Because you're going to sit there and you're going to think, God, no one wants to learn this kind of stuff sometimes. And then you'll realize that you know a lot more than you think you know when things come out. And people will be asking you questions that you can answer in your sleep. And so there's a lot of good that comes from that one-step survey or the one-question survey to really find out, you know, hey, are there some people with some questions there? And that's really the – I took five steps and took it down to three there, but that's really the big concept there of kind of testing this with some of your own people.
And, David, you know, you're pointing out something really important for our listeners to hear, which is that we don't pay attention to what other people are asking. And often it's because it seems like it's such a simple question, we can just answer it off the cuff in a nanosecond. So why would I turn that into a program? Would I spend the time and the hours to construct something with it, market it, advertise it, you know, put it up and have to put a system behind it and everything, when it's so easy I should just answer it and nobody's going to pay for it anyways, and completely misunderstanding.
Right, absolutely. And you got to realize that, you know, there's all kinds of things that people pay for. You know, I mean, I'm like, if you look out there, I mean, I know someone, and don't get scared by this number, but I know someone for a fact that has a product, a course on dog training, okay, dog training. And I know that for a fact that that course has sold almost $1 million, okay, dog training. So, I mean, don't think that your topic isn't something out there. But I do have to say, and Linda, I'm sure you agree with this too, that if you go out there and you're doing some research and you see that there's no other products and programs, there's no associations, there's no experts, there's no other people teaching what you're doing, that's actually more of a red flag alert that maybe it's not the world's greatest topic.
Big time.
It's the rare person who has somehow that perfect spark of the new idea, the perfect audience for it, the right energy, the right airplay, you know, to really trigger something innovative and new.
Right, right, exactly. So, I mean, but it doesn't happen very often, so let's just put it that way.
Right, so true. I'm just looking at the time, and I would love to ask you just for a moment to share with our listeners, what are the kinds of systems you had to put in place in order to run a media printer business?
Oh, yeah, well, I scale up over time. So, I mean, everything is, you know, I'm a huge fan of systems because I like to work on what I like to work on, and I like to not work on everything else. So I like to give that to other folks. So the systems that I have in place right now that I think are pretty important, number one is I have two virtual assistants. One virtual assistant handles all my admin. So you guys work with her, Linda. She handles, you know, scheduling, you know, everything that's related to administration type stuff, you know, schedules, travel, all that kind of stuff, because I hate doing that kind of thing. And it's not really scalable. So I took that off my plate with Linda. I have Alyssa, I have a tech VA that helps me with, you know, tech, like basically helping post my shows and things like that, because I don't want to deal with that. So she does that. I've got a web developer designer that are both freelancers that have been with me for a while, because I can barely draw a photo, let alone a stick figure, let alone design anything or develop, so I don't do that. And then actually the cool thing that I have is that my dad works full-time for me, which is awesome, and my dad is the VP of the Rise to the Top, and he handles all customer service,
He handles like our partnerships and sponsorships and all customer and client related things. And you know, my philosophy is, you know, I love bringing in people that I love having systems for things, and I love bringing in people with like a laser focus. Like, you work on this, you work on this. An example I heard once was sort of like a pit crew with like the cars, like in racing, where, you know, the one person, like, he might be responsible for just like changing the bolt on the back tire, right? So for me, I try to build a team like that where everyone has a very specific responsibility. And that has been something that I've done over time. You know, I'm not in it to build a million different employees or anything like that. But, you know, you can do a lot, and you can run a very successful business with just a few people. So that's kind of what my scope of team looks like right now.
And by having those systems and that team in place, now how are you spending your time? What's the high payoff activities that you're spending your time and attention on?
Yeah, great question. So obviously strategy. So, you know, what are we going to do next, right? Like, what's our next product or program, right? Things like that. Working on, you know, I write all the copy. So I write 100% of the copy. I love it. That is my favorite thing to do. I write the copy. I do the videos. I do the interviews. You know, and then I create the products and programs. That's really what I spend most of my time doing. And it's funny because if you get in the sort of solopreneur mindset, right, it's just kind of like I do everything myself, you know, when you start, it's a good thing to untrain yourself to do that later on. So now it used to be, okay, how can I do this as quickly as possible if it was something I didn't want to do or something that wasn't in my wheelhouse? Instead, now it's like, okay, who can I give this to right now so they can do it? That's always my default at this point, and it narrows down the activities I like. Because my goal, again, is not to have nothing to do. You know, my goal, I love doing this stuff. I love this business. I love working on it, and it gets me excited. What I don't love is, like, working on QuickBooks or something like that. You know what I'm saying? So I make sure that I'm focusing on the areas that I love, and I have someone else to do everything else.
In other words, you like working on it, not in it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, a little bit of both, but I mean, I really, you know, I think that there was definitely growth problems in the past, you know, years ago, where because I was probably doing too much myself, where we couldn't do it. But once you start to put people in place and people that are, you know, self-starters and do not require, you know, constant management, which of course is awesome, that's really where you can start to scale up this business. And, you know, I got to tell you, though, in this industry, and I ask this question to many people as well, like, what's your team look like or what do your systems look like? No one really in this industry has more than a few people. I mean, like, there's some people that go extreme, but you don't need an army of people to run this successful business. And to me, I think that's very lucrative. I'm sure you guys think the same thing. I mean, you don't need an army to do this. You know, unlike other businesses where you need, you know, this and that and this, this really just comes down to a few different things. And I've seen people making $10 million in this business that have four or five people, and that's about it. And that's really all you really need.
Right. It's
really true.
By having the systems and having the team. Once you know what it is that you're trying to accomplish in the business, so that as the leader of the business, you know how to evaluate if people are accomplishing what you need them to do, so that you in turn can focus on what you need to focus on. So it's fabulous.
Exactly.
So what's your next program?
Oh, that's always a good question. You know, we're always working on something here. We're always working on something. So there's actually a couple things. There's a couple things on the horizon. You know, the number one thing I'm working on is an event, another online event that we're going to do in the fall. That's going to be really, really cool. We're still in the preliminary stages of it, so I can't tell you too much yet. But I can tell you the big idea behind it is that we're going to, you know, kind of what we talked about earlier about revenue. And, you know, as you guys know, that there's many, many different ways you can generate revenue as kind of an expert, right? You know, as an advice giver, as a mediapreneur. It can be, you know, masterminds and coaching programs and courses and da-da-da-da-da and da-da-da-da-da and da-da-da-da-da. So what I'm working on doing actually is an event where we're going to be teaching numerous different models. So an expert's going to be coming in on each different type of model to talk about the pros and cons and advice with it. So that people can kind of go through and say, oh, this one's good for me, this one's not good for me, sort of like dating, and figure out which revenue path they want to take next. So that's one of the cool things that I'm working on that I'm pretty pumped about.
And
I love that. If I can do anything to help you with that, David, just let me know.
Oh, absolutely. I will do. I'll probably take you up on that because we're recording this, so you can't back out now, you know?
Okay.
And David, just for clarity, when we're saying event, that what you're putting on is an event, this doesn't mean renting a ballroom and trying to get 1,000 people in seats.
No. This is going to be online. You know, there'll be no ballroom involved. You can sit there naked and, you know, and listen for all I care. We're doing online. You know, I might end up doing like a little bit of a mastermind for some of my higher end customers that are going to come in maybe to St. Louis and do a couple things. So there's always stuff on the horizon of doing this. The online events are really, really great and efficient. And, you know, what's cool is people get the recordings for life and I can have speakers that are all over the world do this that I would never be able to get otherwise. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah, we're just in the preliminary stages of kind of planning that out, but that's going to be a fall 2013 adventure here.
Well, I love it, and I look forward to getting more details on it and letting everybody I know, because you're bringing together exactly the right kind of event for folks who are trying to figure out how to get their presence out in the world and figure out for them their personality, their information, so on, what makes the most sense. And also as a lifestyle, which approach makes the most sense for them. So it's very cool.
Awesome. I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
And in the meantime, if folks would like to start learning from you right now, they can go to bbbnow.com/CAOC for Create Awesome Online Courses. And watch the videos there. Just watch them and absorb everything that David is sharing. And David Siteman Garland, what a blast to have you with us. I'm so glad that we were able to connect and make this happen.
Oh, no, so it's a good way to kick off the day of the week, depending on when people are listening to this. So I appreciate it, and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being here, David. And Linda and I will be back next week on Tuesday at noon Eastern for another great episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great week, everybody.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.